Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. I'm David Bowes, your host. New research on the hammerhead shark reported in Science Daily suggests its ancestor, quote, probably appeared abruptly in the Earth's oceans about 20 million years ago, unquote. In the blog Darwin's God, author and adjunct professor at Biola University, Dr. Cornelius Hunter, posted his observations that the latest research on the hammerhead shows several independent lines of evidence against evolution. I spoke with Dr. Hunter about his blog post.
What is the design significance of their heads?
Well, you can envision quite a few different purposes, and evolutionists have hypothesized several different possibilities. Maybe the cephalofoil, that's what the head is called, was designed for pinning down its prey. Maybe it provides better aerodynamic lift while swimming. Maybe it gives a better sense of smell. The obvious one is with your eyes mounted at the ends of the cephalofoil, you have much better binocularity of vision, so you can see things better. But a lot of people don't appreciate also that a lot of animals, and in particular a lot of fish, have electromagnetic sensors, as does the hammerhead. So that wide snout would give better triangulation for its electromagnetic sensors. So a lot of possibilities there that even evolutionists will hypothesize, but for the evolutionists, it's really kind of gratuitous. They explain these different functions in terms of, well, yes, this is why it evolved, but we really don't need evolution to understand these various functions.
So how do these different functions of those heads affect the evolutionary theory when it comes to hammerhead sharks?
Evolution is so malleable and so flexible that the only effect you're going to have is, oh, gee, it evolved this way. We're learning more about evolution, is what the effect is. Even though it may have appeared abruptly, we do have independent evolution since there's a variety of these hammerheads. And if you look at how the fossils and the molecular data align, they couldn't really form an evolutionary tree with more diversity appearing later. Instead, they have to have independent evolution of some of these features, such as the smaller hammerheads. So they just fit whatever they observe onto the evolutionary story. So it's not a compelling story, but of course it's also not falsifiable.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because in your blog post you wrote that modern hammerheads are the smaller versions of the original and that they independently evolved. Describe what you mean by that, that independent evolution, and why is that significant?
So, and of course, it's not exactly what I mean, it's what the evolutionists mean.
Right, right.
Simply that you look at the specimens that we have today and you try and line them up on an evolutionary tree, and you see, for example, the small hammerheads that you think, well, gee, maybe these are all in a lineage. They all came from a common base, and it just doesn't work out. When you compare the molecules and you compare the fossils, you find that they must have evolved independently, and it just is another indicator of how flexible evolution is. If species are highly related, then the evolutionists will say, oh yes, well, they're on the same branch of the evolutionary tree. They have the same relatively recent common ancestor. If they can't fit it that way, then it's simply a case of, oh, well, they're on different branches of the tree and they evolved independently. So this independent evolution of features is something that you see a lot in evolutionary theory. This is just one example of thousands where you have complex, sophisticated designs arising from what they would say is random mutations. Random mutations had to hit on those designs more than once. So it just adds even more improbability to the theory.
So those random mutations would have to hit on the same design independently more than once in the same general vicinity.
Right, exactly. And evolutionists are somewhat blind to the problem here because they appeal to selection as the solution to all this, but selection really doesn't help. And that's just something that the evolutionists need to reckon with.
One of the comments on your post asks how the explored genealogical relationships may extend hammerhead sharks can be construed as evidence against evolution, and remarks that it seems to him that it's evidence for evolution and common descent. Could you elaborate on that?
Well, the point there, I think, is simply that the bar is so low for evolution that theory evaluation is not something evolutionists are very good at. So practically any sorts of evidence can be interpreted as evidence for evolution. What it really is an explanation of how they think evolution would have occurred. So they're conflating interpreting evidence in terms of evolution and ascribing it as evidence for evolution.
What evidence did you see in this latest research that most struck you as evidence against evolution when it comes to hammerhead sharks?
Well, I guess you'd have to go back to just simply the incredible complexity of biology in general. And in the hammerhead case, you know, the snout, the cephalofoil kind of highlights that with the electromagnetic sensors mounted on it and the eyes spread apart. You can go to the molecular level. You can go to other places in the fish. Every species is loaded with designs that we still don't understand. And certainly random mutations are never going to find in 15 billion years worth of time or any other time frame. That's the biggest problem right there, is just the complexity.
Is there something specific about the latest research that struck you the most?
Nah, I think it's just another interesting finding that I've had a few blogs on the hammerhead. It's kind of an interesting example. And it's just another little step forward in the research, finding that how complex it is and how abruptly it appears and the independent evolution, they all kind of incrementally added to our knowledge of the fish and of the state of evolutionary theory.
And they're also the coolest looking shark there is out there.
Exactly. It's always nice to have examples like that.
I know, it's like a swimming dinosaur or something. It just looks so doggone freaky. Dr. Cornelius Hunter, thanks so much for making the time.
Thank you, David. I appreciate it.
That concludes this edition of ID the Future. If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to support the efforts of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, please go to idthefuture.com and click the yellow donate button. This podcast is copyright 2012, the Discovery Institute. All rights reserved.